It's time for Retro Talk with Retro Rose here on
WXPM
on 98.5
FM.
Hello, everyone. This is Rose with Retro Talk at 98.5 WXPM, and it's on to another Saturday special. Let's get on with collecting. My hosts, co-hosts, Kevin and Mike, why don't you guys say hello?
Hi, I'm Kevin from Peg Warmers.
Hello, I'm Mike from The Bro Show, hashtag just bro it.
And we're going to talk about collecting today. Whether you're a collector or not, I'm sure you know someone that does collect. We're going to talk about the random things people collect and the things we collect. Myself, I've always been a big Transformer collector. I started out with Transformers and Strawberry Shortcake. I had some Barbies back in the late 70s, early 80s, showing my age here. I had, thinking of all the things I had. I didn't have Star Wars, although I wanted it. I have She-Ra, My Little Pony, Rose Petal. And, you know, I'm not even going to go through the whole list because I got to give these guys a chance to say something. Kevin, you can start things out.
So I think the moment I realized I was a collector as a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, I counted up all the G.I. Joe figures I had, and I had 220 of them, counting a couple repeats, and I started to wonder, how many did they make and could I get them all? And I pinpoint that moment as when I went from playing with toys to collecting toys.
I could see that. For me, I think even at like a very young age, after 4 or 5 years old, after I snipped off the nails, quote unquote, from my Hammerhead action figure from Star Wars,
and
I thought they would grow back. I realized toys are valuable, not necessarily valuable in money wise at that point, but they're valuable to me because I wanted to keep them as pristine as possible. So at that point, my action figures never went outside. They stayed inside with me, and they stayed as pristine as possible. Didn't mean they wouldn't get dirty occasionally, but they had to be cleaned up right away. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to keep my toys intact because I want to keep my memories intact.
I actually did that a lot, too. My Strawberry Shortcakes, I remember putting them up on my dresser to keep them nice. And this was like 79, so I wasn't very old. I was about 7 or 8 years old at the time.
Yeah.
I would put them up on my dresser to keep them nice. And when I started collecting Transformers back in the 80s, I imagine, you know, I kept them nice. But now when I look back on the toys that I still have from that time period, the stickers weren't away. I mean, have you ever done that, saved a toy, and you thought, okay, I'm keeping this really nice, but years later when I looked at it, I was like, the stickers are worn away, and I didn't even realize it at the time.
Yeah, I think your hand oils do that at that point, you know.
And sometimes stuff just gets, like, discolored or damaged without you intentionally doing anything to it. It's just the years get to it.
Yeah, because I have a Starscream like that I mentioned in an earlier episode that I had as a kid. And when I look at it now, the coloring of the stickers are worn away. And I was like, and I thought I kept this pristine. I didn't really romp around with it too much. But it just age, I guess, like you said, or it just fades. Maybe I held it too many times. Maybe I kissed it too many times. Oh, my. Kissing my Starscreams.
I went to a friend's house in preschool, and my mom used to talk about how I came home, and I was like, Will and his brother just walk on their toys because they just had stuff all over the floor in their basement. And it, like, killed me that they had stuff that I thought was so cool and they just didn't respect it.
I couldn't even... Oh, that gives me nightmares now. like, for me, it was, like, when my Transformers collection, I somehow had, like, a weird store display that spun around and each shelf was, like, a square. And all the Autobots and their car form fit perfectly in, like, a tile format on one shelf.
This is when you were a kid?
This is when I was a kid.
Wow.
So I was like, this is perfect. Yet, as I got older, some of them got discolored and I realized they were near a window and sunlight got to them. So here, like we're talking about, we think we're keeping them safe. And in fact, no, we didn't know any better quite then yet. Oh my gosh.
Tony and I had that. Now this is as an adult. We got really big in this G.I. Joe at one point. This was like when we first got together, we started collecting G.I. Joe. Got a Mickey Mouse Cobra Commander. And for those that know G.I. Joe, you know what a Mickey Mouse Cobra Commander is. And we put it on display in front of the bedroom window with the whole play set and everything. Years later, we go up there, and he's all faded.
That baby blue plastic they used for Cobra Commander did not hold up well. It's like a lot of white action figures. They turn yellow over time.
Yeah. My real question is, did the Mickey Mouse Cobra Commander ever go on Space Mountain?
He did.
Okay, just making sure.
He said, and when he went down that ride, he was like, Cobra la 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 la.
And if you don't know, Mickey Mouse Cobra Commander is a early release of the main bad guy, and the logo, the snake logo on his chest, just kind of looks like it's got Mickey Mouse ears on it. The eyeballs in the snake logo are a little oversized,
and fans that's why they call him Mickey.
Mickey Mouse.
Now he's the mail order, right? He is a mail order.
Yes, he was a mail order figure.
All right, so the hooded one, was that a mail order?
That was mail order also.
That was also, okay. See, I'm talking to someone that, I played with G.I. Joes, but I'm not the master of G.I. Joes in this room. I'm not the expert, I should say. So I'm pointing towards Kevin, and I know Mike knows a lot of this stuff. So I'm just the little, I'm the follower of those guys. I follow them, follow their lead. Anyhow, besides G.I. Joe and Transformers, there's Thundercats.
Yes.
You guys got any opinions on Thundercats or Masters of the Universe?
You can't talk about Thundercats without at least doing one Thundercats. You have to have at least one of those.
I loved Thundercats and He-Man as a kid, and eventually, like I said, when I sort of converted to collector mode, I sold a lot of those brands because their cartoon shows had ended. At flea markets and yard sales to buy more Star Wars and G.I. Joe stuff. They were the two lines that I collected in like my early teens and later teen years, and I stopped collecting a lot of the other things. Now I've gone back and rebought almost all those toy lines from when I was a kid.
Yeah, I was going to say, you recollected them.
Yeah.
And I tell you, one line of toys for those that are listening that collects toys. I know we're going to have to mention coins and all kinds of things that people collect. But one of the things that I wish I would have collected more of is the Tiger Sharks.
Mm.
And that wasn't, am I saying this right by saying it's LGN, right?
Yep,
LGN. Made all these lines for the Thundercats. Now, Silverhawks was a different company.
That was Kenner.
But it was the same type of cartoon.
Yeah, Rankin Bass, the company that made the stop-motion Christmas specials like Rudolph, they also had a traditional animation division, and they did the Thundercats TV show and the Silverhawks and eventually the Tiger Sharks. And that show was much less popular and the toy line much rarer now to collectors.
Right. And those three shows were supposed to be in kind of a trilogy/... connected universe at the time, though they never technically connected.
And they actually, when you mention that, they had a lot of the same voice actors, right?
Correct.
Yep.
A lot of the same guys did the shows. Yeah, even the Tiger Sharks. Larry and all of them, right? Larry, Kenny and them.
One year at RetroCon, I had Larry Kenny and Peter Newman sign the very last Rankin-Bass Christmas special DVD, The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus, because all the Thundercats voice actors were the voice actors on that special.
Okay,
I didn't know that.
Saying that, can you tell the fans who these two guys are?
The voice of Lion-O and the voice of Tigra from Thundercats, and then they were Bluegrass and Quicksilver on Silverhawks. I don't know which ones
one of them played, and it was Peter. He played Monkeyin, right?
Yes,
Monkeyin, and didn't and
Larry
who did
Kenny
Larry
was
do
Jackalman.
As a villain? Jackalman. Okay, yeah. I knew he did a villain too.
Mm-hmm.
So they did quite a few, but I didn't know they did a Christmas special.
Yeah, they were voice actors on the very last stop motion animated Christmas special Rankin-Bass did.
And what's the name of that one?
The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. It's based on a book by Frank Baum, the guy that wrote Wizard of Oz. It is like Christmas legend meets Lord of the Rings. There's like a wizard with an axe, and all kinds of monsters are trying to stop Santa from delivering stuff. It blew my mind as a kid, and it took me years to find it again. And I showed it to a buddy of mine. Late night one night, he goes, I finally understand, Kevin.
I don't think I've ever seen this. I need to find this now.
No, I haven't seen it either. But besides that, you know, talking about collecting other things, I know people that actually collect cars, collect coins, like I was mentioning. Tony has Tony's in the basement again. And people are going to get to know Tony, even though he's never online. But he works at a convenience store, and people actually turn in their grandparents' coin collection sometimes just to buy a pack of cigarettes. So you can imagine the silver collection he's actually collected throughout the earth unintentionally. This is unintentionally he's collected things because people are turning stuff in. But, I mean, there's so many unique things. So, I mean, we'll probably touch base on other things, but I will say between the three of us, we're all major toy collectors. So you're going to hear more of that during this episode. This whole episode is going to be mainly toy collecting. But we'll touch base on other things. And now we're going to talk about things like what's the most unusual thing you've ever collected. And let's start with Kevin.
I used to save all my ticket stubs. I went to see Twister when it came out at the Barn Cinema, which is now no longer in existence in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. And a guy in the theater mentioned something about saving his stubs, and it just like struck a chord with me, and I saved them. I used to glue them to paper and write down the people I saw the movie with, and I did it for decades. I don't do it anymore because now they're basically receipt paper where you don't get anything at all. It's just on your phone. But for a long time, that was like one of my favorite things to save, just sort of an odd keepsake.
Now that's, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Mike and I did this together. I used to do that when Tony and I would go out to movies early on, like in the early 2000s. But I noticed that the stubs started fading after a while. They would fade.
When they went to the receipt paper, yeah, mm-hmm. they don't hold up.
It's funny you mentioned that because you both mentioned that because I still do that. I make them print it up for me and I put them in a special bag for myself. And at some point, I'm making a poster of it. My ticket stub that goes the farthest back, this is a little risque. But I actually had a girl before my wife, long before I moved to Massachusetts.
Oh, Jen, are you listening?
Don't tell her. She knows this story. I had a girl ask me to a date to go see Showgirls. And I have a ticket stub that's printed on the old like dot matrix stub still for a theater. It's now a David's Bridal. That's for Showgirls. That's how far back I go. And only recently, and I'm talking like maybe a month ago, I broke my streak of not getting a ticket because they wouldn't reprint it for me. Mm. And I was like, this theater, I will not mention it by name, but it is near where I live, did it to me. So, but now,
I didn't mean to cut you off again.
You're Mike. Good.
And if you guys are listening, I'm good at cutting these guys off. Anyhow, when you mention the stubs and such, I bought a collection last year off of a gentleman. This was his wife's monkey collection. She saved everything. Now, she had been about 10 or 15 years older than me. She probably grew up with the monkeys in the 60s or 70s. But she had a booklet, a scrapbook, that had all the concert tickets in it. Wow. From the early 1980s, when they were just starting their reunions again, all the convention tickets, every slip she ever got that was monkey-related, she saved and put in these scrapbooks.
There was a woman that used to go to the Super Bowl. I don't know if she's still alive, but they had made her a jacket, and it was all her tickets, like, laminated into this, like, thing from every Super Bowl.
That's really cool. Really impressive. That's really cool.
And, Mike, you say something, because I cut you off a few minutes ago.
Oh, no, I was going to say what my other unusual collections and stuff were. So,
Tell us.
I shall speak and talk about my collection. So,
I say that, Nalf's going to come after me.
No, for me, the only other kind of oddball collection is I don't get everything I see, but if I see something that really strikes me as cool from the movie Disney's Beauty and the Beast, the animated film, which to me is my favorite movie of all time, I will pick it up. I'm a sucker for anything with Beast or Belle or Mrs. Potts or Chip or anything like that. They recently had an action figure come out of Belle that was like from a video game, but it just looked cool. So I have to have that. I've gotten figurines. I've gotten some stained glass pieces. So it's not necessarily on display for myself. It's kind of stored away right now. But that's my kind of oddball collection. That and Christmas ornaments. For the last 15, 20 years or so, I've amassed, I think it's now 12 or 13, 66 quart bins of toys.
Oh my gosh.
And a collection I know Kevin loves is I have a Rankin Bass set of all the figures from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and some of the Rankin Bass stuff. And they're just some of the most detailed figures. This is from my time when I worked at FAO Schwartz.
Yeah,
and I will never get rid of it. Matter of fact, Kevin and I did it on a show one time and he was like, Whoa. Yeah,
they look fantastic. They look just like the puppets from the series.
Yeah, I will never, ever part with it. And it's probably one of my most valuable collections, but I will never part with it because it's Christmas. It's a meaningful time for me. And they just look really cool.
Now, I have a couple cool collecting things that aren't toy related. I collect, and this is something a lot of people probably collect, I collect keychains. Anything unique, like the old 70s ones, like the ones that look like roller skates. Anything really retro looking. And I collect a few Coke bottles.
Okay.
My dad had a Coke bottle from 1978 that I still have, that still got the Coke in it. I wouldn't try to drink it, of course. And recently, I got a Coke bottle that was from the Sorcerer's Stone from Harry Potter.
Wow.
Came from 2002, never opened.
Wow.
I mean, this thing is a, it does say, and it even says expires 2003 on it. Crazy, but awesome.
I kind of want to taste it now.
Yeah, I would let you try it if you want to try it open.
It's probably a little flat.
See what happens.
I have a collection of animation cells. I went to the Toonzeum, which is no longer in existence, but it was a cartoon museum in Pittsburgh, and it just kind of really inspired me to start looking into animation cells, and I have several cells from He-Man. I have a cell from the Deke era of G.I. Joe. I have a My Pet Monsters animation cell. I think I have one from Ewoks and the Real Ghostbusters. I was sort of trying to collect a lot of the different characters that I like. And it's such a neat thing because it's one of hundreds or thousands of pieces of individual artwork that made up an episode of a cartoon show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my other weird collections, and there's an obvious one I'll probably come to a little bit later here in the show, but my other one, it's I collect like some of the t-shirts I've had over the years. I have t-shirts that go back to, oh gosh, when I was in college. I have like my old college t-shirts.
I actually have a high school t-shirt.
Yeah, and it actually fits in well with the retro t-shirt contest that we do at RetroCon every year, where I actually take one of those shirts and put it on one of my large Alf dolls that I have to showcase what you could have, including some Star Wars shirts I bought when I worked at Suncoast, shirts I bought when I first moved to Boston. I have all of those, and they're just kind of in drawers or in boxes. If there are things I needed to finally get rid of, I make sure to take a photo of it so I have a record of that shirt.
Sometimes it's tough to let it go. I mean, I've like mm-hmm. I said, I got clothes from high school upstairs. I also have a Victrola that was my dad's, so I collect a couple old records, like some 45s.
Yeah.
Have some monkey records up there. You know how I love the monkeys. Have Hank Williams. Because, you know, I have the old ones that would play on the Victrola upstairs. Yep. I have some of those. So that's kind of a neat collecting piece I have.
Yeah.
I did inherit some of my dad's collection. Like, he loved a lot of old cars, a lot of things from the 50s and 60s, like I mentioned earlier. He has had an old movie theater box that would go on your car, that would hook onto your, when you'd go into the drive-in.
The speaker?
Yeah, the speaker.
Oh, wow.
I actually have one of those in the house that was my dad's from his collection. Don't ask me where he took it from, but but I have one of those. I used to play with it as a kid. My dad had a 47 Chevy because he was a big collector of antique cars. And that little box was connected to the window for years when I was a kid.
Wow.
So
when I was little, I collected rubber bands. And I had a whole shoebox full of all kinds of shapes, all kinds of colors. And we had a collection day at Boy Scouts. And I took it in, and the troop leader told me that's not a collection. And I said, it's more than one of one thing. That makes it a collection. But eventually it dry rotted, and I had to throw it away.
Oh my gosh. My rubber bands. Dry. Now, I mean, where I work at in the office, people still collect those, but they make them into the big balls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a couple of the younger guys bouncing them around like they're basketballs at the workplace. Oh, my gosh.
Do you remember on Pee Wee Herman, he had the giant foil ball that he would roll out, which I assume was just a giant prop. You know,
right.
It was probably hollow inside.
But it was great.
It's hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I remember that, too, actually. That's funny.
I would say one of my other collections is every time my wife is out and about doing antique shopping and whatnot, she'll stop and see if she can find old antique cameras, whether it be 8mm cameras or photography cameras or anything like that. Even if she doesn't know what they are, she'll try and pick one or two up for me. And I have this nice little collection of old cameras that date back to like the 1900s even that I have. They don't work necessarily, but they just are cool to have and see. I'm like, this is fun. Like,
I got one from the 1920s, too. They're awesome.
Yeah.
And I really don't really need it, but I saw something really cool that I had to get the other day, too. I was at a flea market and found this it has to be from like the early 1970s, a hotel bathroom soap from the Holiday Inn. Well, and you could tell it was from the 1970s. It's got that old logo and everything.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this is really awesome. Even though I don't really need an old dried out bar of soap, it's got the old Holiday Inn logo on it. So cool item.
That's something just different. Like, I can see people picking up things like that when they're traveling around. When you travel, is there anything special you have to pick up? Like, you know, you have to get like a magnet or anything like that.
Usually a magnet.
We tend to do the magnets. I like postcards sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. It's either a magnet or if I know it's like a movie location, a photo in that spot. That's mm-hmm. a collection of a sort, you know, that you're collecting where you've been.
And I also want to point out something that's unusual that Tony and I collect is like pins. Like if it's a restaurant pin or a toy store pin. Now I'm going to ask the guys, Kevin and Mike, how do you find your collectibles?
For me, it's changed over the years. When I was a kid and in like high school, I used to go to the Quakertown Farmers Market all the time, which is an indoor-outdoor flea market. And that was predominantly where I bought all of my collection in that era because it was the only place I really knew of that was close by. There were a few comic book stores here and there that would go out of business pretty quickly and dry up. And then during my college years, I mostly shifted to online. It became very easy to order things from eBay or different websites. When eBay first came out, I remember having to give my dad cash to buy me money orders on his lunch break and then the next day mail that out mm-hmm. to the people before PayPal. And now I do a little bit of everything, a little bit of yard sailing, a little bit of conventions, a little bit online. But really, shows like RetroCon and other toy shows like that are really where I find a lot of the stuff I buy these days.
Yeah, I mean, for me, honestly, when I was a kid, it was when I started buying for my collection, quote unquote. I was more of a teenager at that point, and I lived two blocks away from a mall. And in the mall was a KB Toys. So I could come home from school, go do my homework, and then half an hour later walk to the mall and just go into the KB Toys. There was also computer store you could go into, not GameStop, but
Electronics
Boutiques. Yeah, Babbage's, both of those actually. They both were kind of in and out of that particular mall. Mall St. Vincent in Shreveport, Louisiana, it's still there. And it was great because I go into KB Toys and go, oh, here's new G.I. Joes. Here's some maybe new McFarlane toys. Here's some new Transformers G2 or whatnot. And that's where the problem started. I'm not going to lie, because the manager at the time started to know me very well. I walk in one day and I turned 16 a couple months before. He goes, hey, Mike, I got these great toys. Do you want to work next Sunday and actually earn some money for your toys? I went, what? And I got a job at KB Toys without interviewing because I knew everybody.
Yeah, and you knew what you were doing, too. You knew what you were actually looking at and how you could help people, too.
But I also got a discount on the toys.
Yes.
And that's what happened. So I was getting a discount on the KB Toys redlined price toys. So I'm like, okay, now I'm done. And after that, I was there for like 2.5 years. Then I got to work at Toys R Us locally for a couple different Christmases. When I moved to Boston, I worked at FAO Schwartz, and it just kind of snowballed from there. The collection, that's where it went to. That's where I started out. And then around that same time at FAO Schwartz in the late 90s, early 2000s, eBay, what is this magical place online to buy toys from my youth?
It really showed us how rare or not rare things were. There were holy grail items that I had only ever heard of
mm-hmm.
that suddenly there were always two available on eBay. And you're like, oh,
yeah,
you know, maybe that thing is more available than I thought.
And it might have been like $10 initially, and then like 2 years later, it's $300. And you're like, I'm glad I bought it beforehand.
Now, this is when Mike was talking about working at a toy shop as a teenager. Now, whenever I was in high school, I went to marketing, so I had to work a job part-time while I was in high school for my grade. I went and started working at a thrift store. And this was like in the early 90s, so you could get G.I. Joes and Transformers for like dirt cheap. I would go in there, and every time, I wasn't allowed to shop while I was working, so I'd call my mom up and say, Mom, I put some stuff behind the showcase, please come out and buy it. And I would buy like loads and loads of Transformer items and weapons, you know, the little Transformer weapons and everything. Because this is when I first, because I collected them as a kid.
Right.
But as like in my senior year, I just went really heavy into it. I mean, I went crazy because I found, I remember I got an Optimus, no, it wasn't an Optimus, it was a Megatron and a Soundwave and a bag for $1.50. Wow. I found, there was Swoop, Grimlock, and Snarl in a bag for $1.50. I mean, this is the kind of deals I was finding, and all these little, and then I found like a whole bag full of accessories for 90 cents.
That's,
I mean,
insane.
That's insane, yeah. It was like 1992. So Transformers were just coming out with the G2 stuff, but it was also where the older stuff was. So there wasn't really any collectors. People were growing up. They didn't want them anymore. They were taking them to the thrift store. So I loaded up with this stuff. And so it wasn't until like the late to mid-90s when I first met Tony, like around 97, I decided, okay, I'm going to come out and visit. And I brought, he's in the basement right now, but he'll even admit that I brought this big container full of nothing but Transformer weapons and says, I don't know what any of this goes to. Can you put it where it goes? And he just spent a whole evening putting it together. And that's all from thrift store finds.
Yeah.
Because I was working there and I was getting like cool items, like I would see backpacks and everything, PJs with the characters on it, because it was the early 90s. Everybody was getting rid of this stuff from the 80s.
Right.
So that's how I really got back into my collecting.
And then you collected Tony.
Yeah, and then I collected Tony.
Okay.
But when I first got all this stuff, I remember he needed it was Outback that he had, and he needed a gun for ages. I brought him this tote, and there was like four of those guns in there, and I had no idea what anything went to. All I knew it was Transformer items.
If you're not a toy collector, you can't understand how annoying it is to try and find the parts and pieces that go with something to make it complete.
And the original version, not like a repainted version or the one from a different version of the character or anything like that, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and even like in the early 90s, there wasn't that many. There was no reissues. There was no variations. And there really wasn't a great guidebook for this stuff. My husband, which I mention all the time, was like an encyclopedia. I took a box load to him, and he could look at it and said, this goes to this, this goes to this. And I was like, this guy's really got it together.
That's why she fell in love with him.
Yeah, right? I mean, all and then I locked him in the basement. He opened the box up and knew exactly where everything went. There might have been a few items. I might be over-exaggerating a little bit, but he knew 90% of what everything went to.
When I was in late elementary school, I used to sort stuff at a comic book store in Quakertown. They would get in G.I. Joes, and I would go in and look at them and be like, you don't have the weapons with these guys. And they'd be like, oh, help yourself. And I would sort out whichever guys I was going to buy. And until I would, you know, my mom would bug me to leave, I would be sorting out all the other guys that were still in the bin, putting the right stuff with
now,
them.
Now, did they give you a discount?
Yeah, they were actually really good to me over the years. That store.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there was a comic book store I would go to called Excalibur down there in Louisiana, and it was a great little store, but they didn't know what they had sometimes, and it was all mismatched, but it was behind the counter, so I couldn't do what Kevin got to do and sort. I was like, I have to take that one, and that one, and I get one good figure. So, but they had great comics, so that was, you know.
I had a toy shop like that in Ohio.
Yeah?
Still exists. I don't want to throw the name out because they'll beat me if they knew. Back in the early 90s, when I first started collecting Transformers again, I went to their shop, and they were guiding me. They didn't know anything about Transformers at the time. And they said, if you tell me the names of these guys, we'll give you a discount. And I remember that's how I got my first Prowl for $4, because I helped him do all this. He says, well, you know, have that Prowl. It was complete, $4. I was like, that's great. You know, this was like around 92, 93. The most horrible thing that ever happened to me, I was at a thrift store that I wasn't working at, and I got a Wheeljack. I wanted a Wheeljack really bad. 100%, it was 100% complete. And I paid for it, and I was going to take it out to the cart, and the lady at the cashier says, we have these little boxes where you take your name and we'll put it with it. You ever seen a place like that?
Yeah, they do it at antique malls.
Well,
yeah.
They did that, and when I came back, they had given it to a different person.
Ah.
And then they said, well, we'll give you your money back. And I was like, you cannot replace this guy for 90 cents. You know, because it was like 1992, 1993. You couldn't find a complete wheeljack easily. There was nowhere to go. You could, no eBay. You know, so it's like, oh my gosh, you know. So that was a nightmare I will never forget.
Oh,
Rose missing out on a Transformer.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I went home and cried over that one. I went home and cried.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, nowadays for myself, I don't have any horror stories for toys per se, but trying to find toys now, I don't do a lot of flea markets. I try to as much as I can. More shows like RetroCon is my kind of go-to show of the year now. And kind of maybe eBay and online shopping and pre-orders. Pre-orders are kind of the yikes. That's where the money goes.
Oh, we don't even want to talk about pre-orders. when it comes to Maddie Collector or any of those sites like
Hasbro Pulse.
When you get in that checkout line, when something comes up that day, watch out. I mean, I've been trying to get Monster High stuff, or when Tony goes to get something that Masters of the Universe, it's tough.
They want to engineer an instant sellout. Like, that's their goal, is if we can make just enough that'll sell out in under a couple minutes, then it's a huge success, and that's really what they're looking for.
Yeah.
So, now we're going to take a break. Remember the music? Remember the movies? Remember the cars, the fashions, the news, the things that stood out during our youth? It's okay to be nerdy. Join me as I reminisce over the cartoons, the toys, and the video games of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Turn back the clock with Retro Talk.
Weekends on 98.5 XPM's Million Dollar Weekend Lineup.
Welcome back to Retro Talk. And we're going to talk about what you do at a convention. What's the first thing you do whenever you're walking around collecting? As I mentioned during our little breather here, that my husband and I, when we go to a convention, we usually do a quick walk around, see if there's anything we really want, and then a second one to really dig through those boxes. So I'm going to find out what Mike and Kevin do. Mike?
For me, when I go to a convention, it depends on the convention type. There's what I consider pop culture conventions, and there are ones that I consider like a toy convention or for collectors specifically, like a toy show or something like that.
I'm nerdy. I like the toys.
I know. RetroCon is kind of like both, but more toy collection show than more pop culture, which I really like. So for a convention like that, I end up walking in first when I have the time at RetroCon, but other conventions, I just walk in and go, all right, let's walk up and down the aisles, check and see what tables have kind of what I'm looking for, what stands out. I'm looking at the top shelf for anything that's big that says, I have this type of collection, whether it be Star Wars, Transformers, G.I. Joe, whatnot. And then I look in down and see if there's any bins or whatnot. I'm not a bin sorter. I don't look for parts necessarily. I'm more of a boxed kind of guy. I want either brand new or in the bag sorted for me, as I'm lazy. I don't want to do all that extra work. But that's kind of what I look for. If it's a pop culture convention, which is not necessarily more toys, but like actors and photos and things like that, I might look for a cool piece of artwork or a cool pin or something like that to say I was there. That's what I'm looking for. But that's kind of me. Like, I don't go and buy too much, usually.
I think.
Don't tell my wife I buy too much. But yeah, I tend to have a lot of fun. And what I look for the most right now, and sometimes people just give to me, is Alf.
Oh, Alf stuff,
I have a bit of Alf collection.
As you get to know Mike, whenever I bring him on a show, you're going to find out that he loves Alf.
Who are you talking about? Alf? Who is this Alf? Oh, that's me. That's right. Alf is awesome.
That's Alf. And I'm going to tell you that I'm the complete opposite. I buy a ton of things. Tony might buy one or two items, but I buy a ton of things. Now let's hear from you, Kevin. What do you buy? Well, how do you do it?
So I find oftentimes the tables to be like sensory overload. So I definitely need that first pass through. I do sometimes, if there's something that's kind of on my short list of top priorities, I will snatch that in the first time around. But it usually takes me going all the way through before I start rooting through bins and things like that. And I definitely am a parts hunter. I often say that, like, I'm a scavenger when it comes to collecting. Like, I grew up collecting vintage toys at yard sales and flea markets. So buying the Millennium Falcon, missing the little chess table or the windscreen or whatever, was kind of the way I grew up. So then now you're looking for those kind of leftover parts in a collection. And so that, so I do like to dig, but I try not to get bogged down in the digging on the first pass through.
Yeah, you want to see if there's anything really, really good that you want.
Yeah, with big standout
items. I mean, Tony and I went to a show in Maryland recently, and the first thing we did was walk through everything, see if there was anything that stands out, and then go through again. And some of these toy shows are really big. And like the guys mentioned, RetroCon, which we're going to be mentioning that a lot until it comes up around. So please don't let it drive you nuts. That's what we're here for, to drive you nuts. Anyhow, I'm making Al flasp over here. And anyhow, when I go to a toy show, that's the same thing I do. Walk around. I found a walking Barbie from 1966 last week, and I was tickled pink.
Does it's she actually walk?
It's a Barbie doll, but it's walking Jamie. And she's a Sears exclusive. Ooh. And you would squeeze her back, and her legs go back and forth, and her arms go back and forth.
All right.
And some of them actually come with walkers, where you move the walker around, and they actually go back and forth walking. And their heads actually go back and forth, too. These are like from, like...
Like an old person walker?
60, like yeah. No, it's like a stand you put them on.
Oh, okay,
it's
I got
a stand
you.
That's got wheels underneath of it.
Okay.
And you push it, and they walk back and forth, and their heads turn... I mean, this is from the mid-1960s to the 70s. And, I mean, they really knew how to make toys.
Some high-end engineering.
That
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have some living Barbies from 1971 that they come with this stage. And you turn it on, and it makes them rock back and forth. They're rockers. It's like...
Oh, from the Barbie yeah, and the Rockers
yeah,
line?
Well,
yeah,
well, this
yeah,
is
yeah.
from 71.
Oh,
so this is
before
even
that.
Before
gotcha.
Barbie and the Rockers. This was like... more of hippies.
Oh, okay.
They had like headbands. They had the fringes and everything. I mean, you could tell these are definitely 71, but they were called live action Barbies.
Counterculture Barbie.
Yeah, but they really do move. The motion is there and everything.
I would
the
be worried they'd come to life when I'm sleeping or something.
Yeah, I mean, the motion and everything in these, you would, you know, anything from the 60s and 70s in the 80s, they knew how to make toys. They knew how to make them last.
I would agree with that. I totally agree with that. Oh, my God. They may get color faded, but the toy would not break unless you had the internal band on your G.I. Joe. Sometimes that might snap.
That might snap. And, you know, I want to make sure I get this in before our show ends. So Tony and I, like I said, we met at a Transformer convention. And there used to be this one vendor at the end of the show on Sundays would take... handful of Transformers and throw out a Transformer for fans to catch just as a draw to get them to come over to their table. And they would throw usually small things, you know, like the Constructicons or the Combaticons, something like that. And I remember one time I was standing back and saying, Lord, please don't let them throw a Jetfire. Someone's going to get a head concussion.
Jetfire is made out of a lot of diecast metal.
Yeah.
He's a pretty heavy Transformer.
Yeah, for those that don't know him, he is gigantic. If someone smacked you upside the head with one of those, you would feel it. So he would be like throwing these, and I'm like ducking for cover and everything.
I can't imagine throwing a Transformer
diecast
toy.
Transformers coming at you.
It's like hail from the sky almost at that point. That's
if Tony wasn't in the basement, he could actually confirm it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I just remember, I don't know, for me, let's see, craziest convention experience or toy buy maybe for me. I remember actually, no, not even a toy buy. I used to take a Deadpool figure with me to conventions to take photos of him in front of different things and
I
whatnot.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. I actually had bought like three or four just in case I lost one or one got broken or anything like that, or I gave one to a kid or anything. And there was one point I put one on top of a kit car, took the photo, and walked away without the figure and didn't realize it's like an hour later. I go back, Deadpool's gone.
Yeah.
So that Deadpool... gone. I don't know where he's at now.
Yeah, it's easy to do with that kind of stuff. I mm-hmm. used to carry around a baby Skeletor figure to a bunch of conventions.
Yes!
It was a Mattel, like, collector exclusive. They took one of their baby doll bodies and released it in blue plastic and put a Skeletor head from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. So it was a very cute
Now, was version. This a custom toy?
No, it was an official release when Maddie Collector was going on. So it was just a sort of a connection to Robot Chicken. Mm-hmm. They had teamed up with them to release a couple different toys, and there were some sketches where Skeletor was a baby on that show, and they put out a baby doll. I used to take it around to conventions sometimes and get pictures of it with the cosplayers and stuff.
We don't really have a whole lot of time left, but I do want to mention one odd toy I got on eBay one time. It was a She-Ra figure, one of the earlier ones from the 1986, and someone took like a Moon Charmer, one of those Moon Charmer Dreamers, whatever those little 80s toys are. They took the head from one of those and put it on She-Ra's body.
That and I thought
it was
weird.
The weirdest thing that I had to buy it. It was
you
on
had
eBay.
To buy it.
I had to buy it. It was like, this is so freaky. I gotta buy it.
I always take pictures if I see weird like custom like head swaps and things like that at toy shows. I don't always buy them, but if I see them, I have to take a picture just because I think it's really funny to imagine how did this come about? Was this a dad trying to fix a broken toy for their kid? Was mm-hmm. this a kid like Sid from Toy Story cobbling together
his
own figures?
It makes you wonder because I've seen a lot of toys like that. The parents are trying to obviously fix something and didn't do too great of a job. So would you guys like to say anything else before we end this episode?
I'm just trying to think. Anything else? So for me, honestly, collecting itself is just a fun experience. It's something that connects me back to my youth for myself. It lets me remember being a kid more than anything else. And it kind of puts me in that space of a time when I was with my mom and my dad before being an adult.
Yeah.
And I want to keep that feeling. Yes, we all grew up. Yes, we're all living our normal adult lives.
And
but
we're being responsible.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
most of the time. But to have those collections, like for what we have, like Kevin with Master Universe and Thundercats, you with your Barbies, yeah. Miss Rose and everything.
It's really the nostalgic end of it.
It really is.
Nostalgic. Just like I said, my dad used to be very nostalgic.
Yeah. So I really want to keep that. And now being a little bit older and a lot older than most people I know, I want to keep that youth and let people know it's okay to have your favorite toy. Yeah. It's just the way it should be.
I also try to remind people that are new to collecting that it's a marathon, not a sprint. You don't have to spend all your money. You don't have to buy the first version of that toy you've been looking for that you see. Find one that's in good condition. Find one that's in your price range. You don't have to own it all in one convention.
I keep trying to tell myself that with Barbies. It's tough. I see a bunch and I was like, oh, I want that, I want that, I want that. No, I can't do that all the time.
And I think in that same vein, Kevin, you don't have to compete with anybody either. Just buy for yourself.
And I think with the end of this, thank you for listening to Retro Talk. We will see you next week.
Listening to
Retro Talk with Retro Rose
here on
98.5 WXPM.
Be back next week, same time, same channel.